This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 12, and it is your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. I've got a question. I can remember it. Can anyone else remember the question I came up with yesterday? I've actually managed to remember. Keith had to remind me that I had a question. He couldn't remember what the question was. But I can remember what the question was. I just couldn't remember that I had a question. That is why we work together like Batman and Robin. And if you have a question that needs an answer, then ring in with it now. 0345 6060 973 is the number you need if you're familiar with this feature. If you're not, then allow me just a moment or two to set out my stall. I used to say, I haven't said this for a long time, like the newspaper columns which don't really exist anymore because of search engines, where you'd write in and say, why do we do this? Where does that come from? What's the reason for that? And then another reader, sometimes weeks later, would write in with an answer. But we do it live. You'll get your answer today if things go well. However, you are not allowed to use search engines. So it's a sort of celebration of education or knowledge. That's all. So, you know, these days they can take their calculators into maths exams and they can take their smartphones into English lessons. They can look everything up. The idea of having to memorise. My mum can still do the full list of kings and queens of England off the top of her head. I can't imagine anybody under the age of 60 could do that these days unless... Oh, no, they could, because they've learnt it on Horrible Histories. Actually, that yeah. So, but you take my point. You don't need to commit to memory huge tranches of knowledge and data because we have it literally at our fingertips in a way that when we were young, when I was young, you simply didn't. So that's why what it's put. It's partly to celebrate the fact that you know stuff. It doesn't have to be highfalutin or particularly intellectual. Why do you know that? I'll say, what are your qualifications? You could say, I have a PhD in applied mathematics. Or you could say, I saw it on the telly last night, James. They're literally equally valid qualifications. It's simply seeking to establish how you know what you know so that we can be confident that you have provided a definitive answer. Are we good to go? I think that pretty much covers it. I've even got a paper and pen this week. I've been trying to do it from memory recently because of COVID restrictions. There's less stationery knocking around the studio. But I've got a paper and pen this week. So what could possibly go wrong? 5 minutes after 12. Paul's in Greenford. Paul, question or answer?
Hi, James. Question.
Carry on, Paul.
Would facial recognition software work on animals?
Oh, I can have a crack at this one. The answer is yes.
Okay.
But you're going to need a little more than that, I sense.
Yeah,
okay.
Really.
Are you familiar with our friends at Bellingcat?
No.
So Bellingcat is not a cat. It is a journalistic operation who've done absolutely incredible work on things like the Malaysian Airlines jet that was shot down and huge insights into... I think it was Bellingcat, in fact, headed up by an amazingly inspirational chap called Elliot Higgins. And they used... I forget what the correct... It'll come to me in a minute, the correct term, where they collate information from publicly available sources, whether it's CCTV or... And they do amazing detective work. And they track down, for example, the two Russians that arrived in Salisbury to trying to poison Sergei Skripal. You remember that story. And they go through all of the details. And they did it on... I think it was in Dubai. It was certainly somewhere in the UAE. Really exotic animals, like endangered species, being used as money-making wheezes or as tourist attractions. And they managed to establish the same animals were being used in different scenarios and different stories. So, and they did it by applying to markings on an animal the same sort of technology that would be deployed on facial recognition. So gaps between stripes, that like really... I hope I've got this right because I'm almost certainly going to give myself a round of applause. But they managed to establish, I think, snakes and ocelots and all sorts of things. And it was an absolutely fascinating piece of work.
Well, all right. Because I just thought it'd be so good for things like, you know, cat flaps or dog flaps. So it's only your pet that can come in.
Well, I feel that you've kind of... I mean, I've just given you an astonishing piece of 21st century journalism, Paul, which is allowing... the authorities to track down people who trade in animal misery and who add creatures to the endangered list on an almost annual basis. And you've I feel you've dragged it down a bit with your cat flap contribution. I'm not sure what to say to that, because you've got a chip. Your cats are chipped. They don't need facial recognition technology. Well, anyway, I'm taking a round of applause. So thank you for the question. If I've got any of that wrong, I'm sure it will be corrected imminently. And I'll try and find a little bit more detail on that story, because it was absolutely fascinating. And Elliot has been a guest on Full Disclosure, actually, on the podcast, which you can find in the archive. It's an astonishing archive now, actually, the Full Disclosure. This week's is brilliant. Lucy Kellaway, who gave up a job at the Financial Times at the age of 57 to retrain as a teacher, which an awful lot of people have been in touch to say they found really inspiring. Not necessarily as a gateway into teaching, but to readdressing the attitude that we have to getting to the end of our working life or ageing in general. Thank you, Paul. Callum is in Manchester. Callum, question or answer?
It's a question.
Carry on.
It's quite funny, this, after the last hour that we've just had. Because I've been sitting on this question for a long time. Why do we have different accents? Like, where are they from? Why does Manchester have such a different accent to Liverpool when it's only separated by 40 miles? Like, when did different accents start? Where did they come from?
Hang on, you're only allowed one question, mate.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. But I think I can have a crack at this one as well. But I don't want to go back to the days when I tried to answer every single question. So I probably won't take a round of applause for this. But it's environmental and geographical. So Liverpool's accent is more heavily influenced by Irish immigration than Manchester's is. Think of it also as, you know, when you drop a blob of ink on a piece of blotting paper and it spreads out, but the colour changes. Yeah. The colour changes as it spreads out. So there's a bit of that going on as well. It dissipates the further away you go. You get down to the Black Country, there's a theory that because everything was so polluted, people started, you know, they couldn't breathe through their noses much, so they talked more like this. That will be part of it. So that would be environmental. And then you'd have, going really far back, you'd have influence from things like Viking invasion or the Norman conquest, and some sort of little verbal habits and accent characterizations that go back centuries even, and less mixing, of course, as well in the olden days. So you wouldn't necessarily ever go more than 10 walking distance or a horse ride away from where you were born in the course of your entire life. So accents got kind of baked in more than they would these days.
Ah, I see. So basically, like, different twangs come from different things from so many years ago.
Yeah.
So obviously, like, Irish immigration, and then going back even further, you could go back to environmental and, like, Roman times even.
I don't know about Roman, but yeah, I mean, certainly far back. And bits of it don't make sense because, well, you know, you're Liverpool and Manchester, you'd think both heavily influenced by Irish immigration, so should probably sound more similar. And yet, probably if you had some computer program that was picking out points of interest, they're going to sound a lot more similar. The two major northwest accents are going to sound a lot more similar than a southwest and a northwest accent, aren't they? So Manchester and Liverpool are much closer to each other than Bristol and Liverpool, for example. So coming into Bristol, you'd have the sailors coming in from other parts of Europe, from that side of the, I mean, there's all sorts of reasons.
Yeah, I mean, going to uni in Leeds, I just dialed my Manchester accent up just so it was quite clear where I was from in the end, really.
And then to a southerner, they probably wouldn't be able to tell the difference between someone who'd grown up in Keighley and someone who'd grown up in Chilton-cum-Hardy. But to someone from Manchester or Leeds, those accents will sound as like chalk and cheese.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Cholton accent's quite different. I mean, I'm from Old Trafford, and I kind of find the Cholton accent's a little bit different. It's a little bit more well-spoken.
It is these days. It wasn't when I lived there. And then you go back to when the Bee Gees used to live. The Bee Gees grew up on the street I used to live on. So you go back that far, and the accent would have changed again. That's why Kate Robbins was so interesting earlier when she said that the way the Beatles talk, hardly anybody talks like that now in Liverpool. That almost, I'd use the word lugubrious to describe it. That you know, and John Lennon, lugubrious accent. I never get a call from Liverpool that sounds like that. So that's evolved as well. That's gone.
I mean, the pubs on Fourbanks in Cholton, where I go to, they definitely don't sound very posh, but the further in you go, they definitely sound more well-spoken.
The horse and jockey. Very gentrified these days. Shall I take a round of applause for that, Callum? Do you think we've covered it? It's up to you, mate.
Yeah, go on. I'll let you deserve it.
Nice one, thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers. There's room to add to that, I guess, but I don't think there's room for a steward's inquiry. Hugh is in Hampstead. Hugh, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Why is Team GB called Team GB when Northern Ireland is included.
So it should be Team UK, most obviously, shouldn't it?
Yes, it should be Team UK.
It's a great question.
And if Northern Ireland isn't included, then the Union Jack shouldn't be representing Team GB.
Well, it is included. I mean, Northern Irish Northern Irish athletes do compete for Team GB, but of course GB doesn't contain Northern Ireland. So it's a great question, that. I don't know what the answer is. I'm surprised I don't know, because I've seen a few people asking it on Twitter this week. I obviously haven't clicked on the answers yet. We shall try and find out. Thank you. Why is it Team GB, not Team UK? Steve's on the Isle of Sheppey. Steve, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James. Good afternoon. How are you?
Very well indeed. Carry on.
Good, good. It's one of them questions that your kids ask that should be simple.
How do you know my kids?
Maybe feel quite silly. Generic kids.
Oh, okay,
there you go. why are police car lights blue? Out of all the colours in the whole world they could have picked,
yeah,
why was it blue? Because my little boy's theory is that bright white, like that bright LED white,
yeah,
you can see a lot easier than blue.
Can you though on a really bright day?
Blue?
On a bright white day?
Say again, sir?
On a bright white day, I bet you can't. We'll leave this on the board for a proper expert, but I bet it's Occam's razor. I bet blue is the colour that cuts through the spectrum most effectively, whether it's light or dark, or because red would get lost in the sunlight.
Some of the modern police cars now, they do a combination. It's always blue, but there's always like a little bit of bright white or a red or something in there as well, which may mean different things if you're in the police.
Oh, yes, of course.
Might mean different things, but predominantly, obviously, ambulances, fire, police, etc.
Why blue?
Out of all the colours, why blue?
Yeah, and if the answer isn't a variation on because it's the best, I'd be very surprised, but we want to hear it from somebody who sounds a little bit, but we owe it to your son to come up with a slightly more sophisticated answer because blue is the best. Don't
well, that was all I had.
Yeah,
you know,
well, that's the dad answer. At least you didn't go for because I say so, which is it's the next stage in the conversation. Steve, that's a lovely question. What's your lad's name, if you don't mind me asking?
Alfie.
Let's find out for Alfie. Why are the emergency lights always blue? Why is it Team GB, not Team UK? I think I've covered the facial recognition for animals and indeed the origins of accents. But as ever on Mystery Hour, it's a family affair. If you think you can add to my already applauded answers, then do feel free. I suppose I'm saying come and have a go if you think you're smart enough.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:18 is the time. You're listening to Mystery Hour. Two questions on the board, two already answered, and plenty more to come. Mark's in Colindale. Mark, question or answer?
Good morning, James.
Right.
It's something that I've been reminded of watching the Olympics.
Yes.
Which is about swimming lanes.
Yeah.
I want to know why they numbered the wrong way. Because they are numbered 1 to 8 from right to left.
Yeah.
And I always, whenever I see the swimming, I always wonder why. And
so one is on the far right, is it?
Yes, number one's on the far right, and lane 8's always on the far left. Now, as you would write it, obviously, 1 to 8.
You walk in first. You walk in first.
Well, surely pools are designed different ways, and changing rooms would be different sides, so they might walk in the other way. But they always have it because the camera, when they start, is always at lane 8. And so they say whoever's leading's in lane 3, and you count up from where the camera is, and, oh, no, that's lane 6, isn't it? And you have to keep counting up.
No, I understand why you're asking.
And
it gets confusing. They say it's in lane 7, and you think, no, he's not. He's in lane 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think is it because of we're watching it on the telly? Would it make more sense if we were watching it in real life?
No, because if you look, they always start with lane 1 on the right-hand side.
Yeah, but if you're in the swimming pool, then lane 1 is on the left-hand side. Oh, you know, you're facing it. No, because you're behind the swimmers.
Yeah, if you're behind the swimmers, lane 1
Yeah, but if you're not behind the swimmers, if you're at the other end of the swimming pool, lane 1 is on the left. This is like stage left and stage right.
They always start that way.
Of course it matters. The judge is at the other end of the pool. Imagine that the audience is at the other end of the pool. So you would go left to right, you see.
Judges on the relays are at that end.
It doesn't matter. You don't watch it from behind the swimmers. You watch it from the other end of the pool or either of the two sides, both of which, all three other sides of the swimming pool, it would make sense to go in the way that you're describing. The only way it doesn't make sense is the side where they jump in. No, that's just correct. I can't believe it's come to me in the course of this conversation. This is like a magical moment live on the radio. You must be amazed to be part of it.
I'm not wholly convinced.
What? But that's why it is. So you're watching, right, okay, close your eyes. You're not driving or anything, are you?
No.
Close your eyes.
Yeah.
Right, you can sit anywhere in the swimming pool except behind the swimmers. Where are you sitting?
Okay.
Now do you see?
I'm sitting behind the camera, where the cameras are.
But don't be pedantic. You're in the audience. Well, you're not in the camera gantry.
Yes.
So you're on it has four sides, this rectangle.
It has four sides.
You can pick any of the three to sit in.
Okay, so.
And now it makes sense. Now it's left to right.
So that's only if there's only viewing on three sides.
No,
and not four.
Because even if it was four sides, it's democracy. 75% of the seating is looking at it from left to right. Even if you've got some people sitting behind the swimmers, that's only 25%. It's the will of the people.
It still doesn't make a lot of sense.
It makes perfect sense.
Because we always count numbers up like we would write from 1 to 8, from left to right.
It is from left to right if you're sitting on the other three sides of the swimming pool.
No, because if you're sitting behind the swimmers...
That's the other side, that's the fourth side. Stop it, Mark.
No.
Yes!
It'll be two out of the four. If you're sitting behind the swimmers or behind where the cameras are, that's two sides.
Where are the cameras? Why do you keep talking about the cameras? Where are the cameras?
The cameras go along the side of the pool, along the lane.
Oh, well, that's not... They're moving. They don't count. It's a stationary seating arrangement. They were doing swimming galas long before they were televised, mate. Get with the programme.
So therefore, two sides of the pool and not
three
four
sides.
Would
three
be
sides.
Wrong.
It's three sides of the pool.
It would be two.
I have done that thing that I haven't done for a very long time, where I get incredibly strident about a subject I know absolutely nothing about. I was moments away from thumping the table then, so I could have got this categorically and completely wrong. But
when I was young, I did compete in swimming competitions.
Yes, so did I. You're not getting a prize for that.
And lane one was always.
Yeah, but
was
they weren't
always on the right hand side.
Was it?
When the ES.
God, what, you took notes. You've been checking your diary, have you, Mark? From 1974, rubbish. You can't remember that far back.
No, I probably can't. Actually,
All right. Well, I think I'm right, and you think you're not right necessarily, but you think it is confusing, and I don't think it is.
I think there may be another reason. Let's
put it on the board. I'm not going to work out what the question is because it's too confusing even for me. So I'm just going to say Mark's swimming lanes question. All right, that is how I'm going to describe it. I'm definitely not going to take a round of applause, even though I'm on a hat trick. Thank you, Mark. Damien's in Guildford. Damien, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on.
It's your question. Yes. Why did Japan
No, this is awful. I haven't even asked it yet. This is a real mystery hour history. This is a history mystery hour moment. I haven't asked the question yet. Can we fix the phone line really quickly? Do we know what happened? Have you climbed up a ladder? We'll come back to him sharpish, because this is going to be the first time in mystery hour history that someone's answered a question that hasn't actually been asked yet on mystery hour. Oh, hold on to your hats. Is he there? Damien, are you there? No, never mind. We'll try again. Honestly, don't go anywhere. Get out of the cellar. Get down from that ladder. Climb out of the well. Hannah is in Woking. Hannah, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Hannah.
So I was wondering, if our internal body temperature is 36.5 degrees Celsius, then why does 36.5 degrees Celsius, or even 30 or 27 or whatever, ambient temperature feel so hot to us?
Oh, we've had this. I should be able to remember it, but it's not. It's not going to happen.
Or even in water, or, you know, even when we're babies and we're in the amniotic fluid.
If our core temperature, so to speak, is X, why do we feel hot when it is outside of our body? It's X minus 5 or X minus 10. How can that
possibly
be?
And even in water as well, because when you're in the hot tub and it's 38 or even, you know, 37, 36, it still feels hot. It doesn't feel neutral. Mm.
And yet there is a temperature. I don't know if you go to boarding school?
I didn't. I went to a flexi boarding school.
You went to a what?
Flexi boarding.
I thought you said sexy. I thought you were going to. What the hell is she talking
about? Maybe that as well, but no.
So we used to do this thing where if you got the temperature dead right and a lad was asleep and you put his hand in a bucket of water, then he'd lose control of his bladder.
Yes, I have heard that before.
So I don't know. I can't remember what the temperature was. I think it might. Okay, we'll find out. Yeah. I was just dropping some anecdotes into the conversation there in the hope that the memory bank might fire up and I'd remember the actual answer. But I've got nothing, Hannah. I do apologise.
That's all right.
We shall find out for you. What's that? What's going on? Hey, 36.3, I usually am at the moment. I get tested every morning. And yet, if the weather is. Yeah, well, you understand the question. 26 minutes after 12. Third time lucky with Damien in Guildford. Damien, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
There we go.
So you asked the question, why is Gibraltar 115% vaccinated?
Yes, but this was yesterday.
Yeah, but at the beginning of this show, you said you were going to put the question on.
But I didn't, though, did I?
Well, that's what I heard.
But did I say the question about Gibraltar? Did I repeat the actual question?
No, you said you couldn't remember it.
Yeah, exactly. So you're answering a question that hasn't been asked. This is a historical moment in the history of radio. And also human interaction. But that was yesterday. This is Mystery Hour. Within the parameters of Mystery Hour, you are about to make history by answering a question that hasn't actually been asked. Or, even better, you're answering a question before it's been asked.
Okay, ask the question.
No, answer it.
The reason is because Gibraltar, when they have a lot of Spanish workers there, they vaccinated the Spanish as well. So the population includes all the Spanish workers. So it's 115% of the people that live there.
So they've vaccinated more people than the population?
That's right, yeah, because of the Spanish workers.
Qualifications?
I listen to a podcast that investigates statistics. It's called More or Less.
Oh, I love that.
On the BBC.
Tim Harford. Superb program.
Tim Harford, I listen to that all the time. I'm a government statistician, so it's part of my job.
I must have missed that one. It's public service broadcasting at its absolute finest, isn't it? And it's delivered you one of these.
James, can I ask you a quick favour?
Well, I guess you can, given that you've just broken all the rules of Mystery Hour in the space of a 3-minute conversation.
Okay, well, in July 2013, you asked everybody in your entire 15 hours of the week what is their favourite cheese, and I was feeling a bit left out.
Okay, do you want to tell me now?
Yeah, I don't eat cheese, I can't stand the stuff.
Give another round of applause. Come here. David. Have you been waiting 8 hours, 8 years to do that?
I have, yes.
Was it worth it?
It was. Thank you.
Thank you. God, that's going back. What's your favourite cheese? I did. I didn't do a whole week on it. I mean, we had other topics, but I think I added. We used to do. Damien, do you remember when we did? Is there any food in the history of the world that can't be improved by the addition of cheese? Do you remember that one?
I do remember that one, yeah. I tried to ring in then, I think.
God, you deserve a lot. You deserve a medal for all sorts of reasons, but I'm thinking chiefly long service. Thank you for staying on board for all this time. What a beautiful moment. Thank you, David. We should have some sort of... Well, give him a blooming Rayleigh. Damien, come back. Have one of these, mate, with my compliments.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you build it, they will come.
I don't know why you got that, but it's for...
I'm telling everybody. That's made my last 10 years.
Made your decade. It's going all the way going all the way back to 2013. Thank you, Damien. And that is a richly deserved Ray Liotta, because I can't put it into words, but that was listening and contributing way, way, way above the call of duty. So I issue that one with my compliments and absolutely no doubt whatsoever. Coming up to 12:30, you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where after all these years, we now know that Damien doesn't like cheese. Imagine the frustration of listening to that programme 8 years ago, thinking, just presuming arrogantly and blithely that everybody would have a favourite cheese. Philip Criticos is here with your headlines.
At the Bank of Antandek, mortgages are on the menu.
I was in the chippy last night and it hit me.
Go on.
We should give all our new mortgage customers £1,000 of spuds.
Potatoes.
Yeah, jackets, roasties, dolphin wars. I mean, what's not to love?
Hey, yeah, we could call it
Mashback. Genius.
Meanwhile, at Santander, they're giving their customers £1,000 cash back on selected first-time buyer mortgages. See what's possible at Santander.
Lending subject to status and criteria. Cashback given on completion and repayable if mortgage closed within 2 years. Offer can be withdrawn. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
12:34 is the time. And what are we looking for? Why are emergency lights always blue? They've got to get that one right for Alfie. Why is it Team GB, not Team UK? Mark's swimming lanes lesson question, even. The Gibraltar we've done. And the body temperature question. How come we feel hot when we're in temperatures that aren't as hot as our internal temperature, if you follow me? Rob's in Canterbury. Rob, question or answer?
It's an answer for you, James.
Carry on, Rob.
It's for the blue lights on emergency vehicles.
Oh, yes.
Back in the day, in the UK, we only just used to have bells on police vehicles, ambulances, etc. In America, they introduced flashing red lights on the top of vehicles, but they found that it would cause problems in fog, rain and bad visibility conditions.
Oh, really?
So in the UK, we decided to come up with a colour which would be effective in all of those, because white are headlights, red are tail lights, and amber indicators. Oh, yeah. They came up with blue, because it gets through fog, rain, bad weather conditions, and it was adopted, and that's why we have blue lights.
That is a quality answer. What you did there, this is one of the reasons why I'm trying to interrupt people less, Rob, on the programme. You actually answered all of the questions that were forming in my head as you carried on. it's just like playing whack-a-mole with my slightly hyperactive question formation processes.
The strange thing is, as well, America still use a mixture of red and blue, but they've done that. It depends on states and sort of like the officialness of whether it's federal police or local, etc. And in Spain, for example, they've always used amber on top of ambulances, but the last year they've not gone over to blue.
Good grief.
Sort of like to try and standardise with the rest of Europe. But obviously America still keep their red. But I think that depends on sort of if you're a police officer, which grade, etc.
What are your qualifications?
Since joining St John Ambulance at the age of 11 and being fascinated by blue lights, to my girlfriend's cringiness, I've been fitting the stuff for 40 years.
Have you really?
Yeah.
As a job, not as a volunteer? Do you fit them to the
No, we're both as a job, also as a volunteer, private ambulance company. I could bore the death of you, but as
you
I say...
You wouldn't bore me. I'm not saying that I don't have some sympathies with your girlfriend, but you wouldn't actually bore me. I don't know. I find stuff like this absolutely fascinating. So you've been fitting emergency lights, man and boy.
I spoke to you a while back about the traffic on sat-navs as well, and bored everyone then about the phone mast signals and how that works with the sat-navs, because, again, that's what I've been fitting.
I'm not going to lie to you, Rob. I was less excited about that answer than I am about this one. But this is lovely. How many people fit emergency lights, do you reckon, in the country at any one time?
An average police garage, you have about 4 or 5 members of staff. Same with an ambulance garage. It's just okay. All part of the role. They're the most straightforward thing to do, and especially nowadays with everyone using LED. The LED units don't tend to pack up, whereas the old days, the old filament bulbs are blowing.
You have to change the bulbs all the time. It's just like my bathroom. The LEDs last for years. I'm going to give you a round of applause, Rob. It's a great answer. Thank you, mate.
And
little Alfie, 12 years old, was he? I don't know where I got that age from. Young Alfie, looking for that answer, and you've given him absolute chapter and verse. What we don't know, Rob, is whether his dad will pretend that it's just come to him. Oh, Alfie, I was thinking about those emergency lights, or as dads have done throughout history, or whether he will give the credit where the credit is due to Rob in Canterbury. Karen's in Hackney. Karen, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
Why on the movie credits is the date of production always given in Roman numerals?
I should know this. Karen.
I have no. Is it something to do with being able to read it on a big screen easier?
Maybe. No. Is that? Do you know? Keith's shaking his head in quite a patronising fashion at that point in proceedings. I don't know. I'm going to put it on the. I'm going to put it on the board. It's
cool.
still
this is
does.
My son who is learning about Roman numerals.
How old is he?
He's 9.
That's lovely. Why do they do it? Why do they always do the movie credits in Roman numerals? Always is quite strong, but certainly normally, isn't it? You usually see it. I'm doing that thing. I'm sure everyone can recognise it now. I'm waffling in the hope of dredging an answer up from somewhere in my memory banks. I got nothing. Somebody says, oh, hang on. No, nothing at all. Karen, I shall do. What's your son's name?
Rufus.
Rufus. So if he listens back to this, or is he there now? He's broken up, is he?
No, he's not here at the moment.
Okay, well, there we can listen back to the podcast, which is available as a self-contained podcast, actually, Mystery Hour. It drops every Thursday afternoon. You can listen back to hours and hours and hours. A lot of people tell me it's useful for journeys, long journeys, you know, like holiday journeys, because you want something the whole family can listen to. We're at the stage now where the girls are wearing different headphones and everybody's listening to different things. But when we find something everybody wants to listen to, it's still really nice. It's sort of like childhood holiday drive. So Mystery Hour's perfect for that. We'll do our best, Karen, for Rufus. Judy's in Malvern. Judy, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
Why are humans, about 90%, I think, right-handed? Because there must be some evolutionary gain from it. And yes. Yet our nearest relatives, like apes and gorillas, you know, when asked if they had a preference, didn't have one.
How many have you asked?
At least 10, actually.
Is that true, though? They don't favour a right or a left hand, because some animals do, some mammals do. We've done this before.
Yes, I think they probably... Well, actually, no, I think we're the only ones to absolutely have a... preference. I mean, obviously, you know, if you're one of those big crabs that has a huge right-hand pincer and yeah. you're one, the other one's little, I mean, it's sort of done and dusted, isn't it, really?
Well, is it... Does it not make sense? Is the evolutionary advantage not obvious?
What, for being right-handed?
Yeah.
No. That's why I asked.
No, I know. Well, I know that, obviously. But, I mean, and I know that, obviously, we would have... evolved to favour our right hand long before we used handwriting. But if you're using a handheld implement, left-handed people have problems with things that right-handed people don't have, don't they?
Yes,
but is that because everything's designed for
us are right-handed? It's not because.
But not a screwdriver. A screw. Don't you get left? Do you get? You don't
no,
get left.
No, but if your brain was actually wired to actually be left-handed, I mean. You'd probably screwdrivers would go the other way, but they don't. You know, it would be anti-clockwise.
Yeah,
probably.
So it's a chicken and egg question in a way.
Well,
what came first?
Personally, I think there will be a scientific reason. So I am reaching out to the scientific community because
good luck with that.
Yeah, you have hundreds of scientists.
I do, but I think the main one is on next. He's rung in to answer something else. So,
I have to tell you that I was 40 minutes on the phone before, and I think I actually thought of this and thought, well, I may as well carry on holding because I've been on hold for 40 minutes.
What do you want me to do? Apologise for being so popular?
Well, I was on your last thing was absolutely brilliant about accents, and I had a brilliant story to be told, but you know, you'll never know now, will you?
Well, I will, because everything comes round again in the eventually, Judy. There's nothing's original. I will do it again one day, and I'll make sure you get I'll give you a secret word, all right, next time you ring in. You just say Rastapopoulos, and we'll make sure that you get put on air straight away, okay?
Thanks.
You're welcome. Why are so many people right-handed? What is the evolutionary advantage? Speaking of scientists, Professor Hal is in Brighton. Professor Hal, question or answer?
I've got an answer and, in fact, a confession to make as well, James.
Steady on. It's still,
what would you like first?
Still before the watershed. Let's take the answer first.
Okay. It's the delightful question about temperature.
Yes.
And why we feel hot, even though the ambient temperature is below our body temperature. Our bodies are like car engines. Car engines, ironically, they produce heat, but then you have to have apparatus to remove the heat. So the idea is that you remove the heat as fast as it's produced. And so it is with us. We have to keep our body temperature relatively constant. We're radiating heat, as we spoke about a couple of weeks ago.
We did.
And all the time, all our cells are breaking down glucose to produce heat. So you need to radiate it more or less at the same rate you're producing it. And that requires a temperature gradient. Temperature always goes from hot things to cold things. So if you've got a cool breeze around you, you're radiating heat nicely and you can keep your body temperature as it ought to be. But if you insulate your body and keep your body insulated, you've got no way of getting rid of that heat and you get quite sick. And ironically, when we have a temperature, when you've got a fever or a temperature, that's the body's attempt to kill the bacteria by raising their temperature so their enzymes get all denatured and so forth. So it's literally akin to a car engine trying to radiate the heat as fast as it's being produced.
Well, that's a perfect answer. And the conversation we were having a couple of weeks ago was about black and white clothing, wasn't it? And the reflection of heat.
Literally, you need to try and lose it as fast as you're producing it and keep the equilibrium going. Just like a car engine, if you lose coolant and the car produces heat more than it loses, then you overheat and your engine melts.
What's the confession? Oh, hang on. Qualifications?
I'm very, very lucky to be the Professor of Public Understanding of Science at the University of Brighton.
Why do you always say I'm very, very lucky to be?
Because I am.
I know, but it's like a catchphrase.
No, but I get paid to do something I really, really love. And yeah, exactly. And I know that jobs are hard and you go to work, but the reality is I love what I do. I get paid to learn and then disseminate knowledge. So I'm a lucky guy.
Yeah, fair enough. What's the confession?
Well, I didn't answer a question properly, I think, last week. You asked me a question, and in my wool-gathering professorial way, I started answering it and went off a tangent. And yes. It was about manure.
Yes.
Have we got time for that?
Yeah, of course we have. Briefly.
Right, you said, can you use your own? And yeah. I should have said, did you watch The Martian with Matt Damon?
Ah, and I'd have said no. Why?
Okay, because on that film, it's a really good film with lots of production value, he literally grew potatoes on Mars by using his own manure. But he was very careful to pick only his, which was yet another passing nod to the fact that we are repelled by the manure and vomit and boogers and wee of others, but actually more tolerant of our own. But anyway, it's lost because you haven't watched the movie, so...
Right, you get a round of applause for the first bit. No, thank you. I keep meaning to watch that movie. But again, it's like what to put on in the car. You want something that hopefully everyone can watch together. Oh, we're loving Professor T. I don't know if you've watched Professor... Speaking of professors, God, it's almost like I script this stuff, isn't it? Professor T is Ben Miller's new show. We're loving it. Absolutely loving it. It's a sort of academic... He's a professor, obviously, advising the police on quite interesting investigations. It's really, really good. And I think it might be based on a Belgian original, because it's got a sort of almost surreal element to it, and more sophisticated than your average crime drama. So there's today's recommendation, boys and girls, Professor T. 12:46 is the time. If you're lucky enough to have some spare cash and quite fancy the idea of investing it, but, like me, don't know one end of the FTSE 100 from the other, then Nutmeg could have the answer. You just choose a risk level that suits you from a choice of four investment styles. It includes one that prioritises social responsibility, which would keep my kids happy, and let Nutmeg take care of everything else. They already manage £3.75 billion for about 140,000 customers, and they take all the mystery out of the process by committing to transparency and keeping everything as straightforward as possible. You can see how your funds are performing 24/7 via your computer or Nutmeg's mobile app. As with all investing, your capital is at risk.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
12:49 is the time, and question still in search of an answer. Why is it Team GB, not Team UK? Right-handed, what's the evolutionary explanation for the hugely disproportionate number of right-handed people? Why do film credits always have the year in Roman numerals? Mark's swimming lanes question, which I'm going to take a round of applause for if nobody improves upon what I have asked. I think that's it. Have you got anything else? I think that's covering it. Ned's in Cleobury Mortimer. Oh, it's had a very Worcestershire flavour on Priscilla. Is Cleobury in Worcestershire or Shropshire?
It's in Shropshire.
Oh, it is. Just over the way. Just over the way.
A bit north.
Question or answer, Ned?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
It's Roman numerals.
Oh, splendid.
They are put in Roman numerals on films because it obscures what year they're made.
Why would they want to do that?
Well, because if you look at the television, for example, these days, you look at a film and you think, oh, that's nice, I enjoyed that, and then you find out it was made in 1999, you don't feel a sense of disappointment.
Do you think that's what it is? You think just to hide the fact that something's old?
Well, no, I think it was another reason for it. Probably in the early days of cinema, when they were making the films in the Hollywood studios, they got distribution across the states.
Yeah.
And presumably then everybody went to see the latest film, but it might be quite late.
So they want their money back or something like that. So why are you showing us a film? Yeah. This film's 3 years old or something like that. Or even one year old.
That's it.
Qualifications?
I used to work in television in Pebble Mill.
Have we spoken before?
We have.
I thought so.
Broken biscuits.
That's the one. Hopped on wafers.
That's it.
Okay. Is it still there,
you're
that
wrong,
pub?
By the way, you're wrong about the swimming pool. There aren't four sides.
What?
Yeah, sorry.
Well, you can only answer one question.
All right, I'll just leave you with that thought then.
Well, thank you very much. What's the name of that pub in Hopton Wafers? Can you remember?
The Crown.
The Crown. I may see you in there one day, Ned.
No, I don't use that one. I use another one.
Oh, which one do you use?
Which I will, if you ever want to know where to drink it, up this end of the woods, you're very welcome and take your mum to.
Oh, that's bless you. Thank you. Round of applause for Ned.
Thank you.
Matt's in the New Forest. Matt, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on.
I'm going to try and improve on your swimming pool question.
Yeah, you were pretty spot on,
but so. Health and safety dictates that you would generally enter a pool from the shallow end. But as a professional swimmer, you dive in, and no one dives in the shallow end. So when you walk in from the shallow end, it's 1-8. And when you dive in from the other end, 8-1.
Oh, yeah. Qualifications?
Used to swim in Heart Foundation swimming galas and qualified as a lifeguard some years ago.
That'll do. I think you've been too kind. I think you've replaced my answer. I don't think you've improved it.
Well, thank you. I've waited years to get on the show
I was hoping you'd dispute that, Matt.
you're a genius with the rest of them, James. You get enough round of applause.
This one's for you then. That's only fair.
Make my year. Thank you, James.
Oh, thank you, Matt. That's lovely stuff. 12:53 is the time. We'll never know whether or not that is what Ned was going to point out as well, either, but that is such is the nature of mystery. That was quite a bellow, then. I hope that didn't take anybody by surprise. Cindy texted earlier to say, James, do you know that you laugh lots more than you used to do on the programme at the moment? Keith's now pointing at himself. I think it's probably got more to do with therapy than it has to do with Keith becoming a colleague on the programme. But also, you know, it's important. As long as you are telling the truth, then however bad the news is, you can't let it get to you. 12:53 is the time. Lewis is in Ealing. Lewis, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on, Lewis.
So why are most humans right-handed?
Carry on.
There are two theories on this. So it's not a definite answer because science hasn't actually worked it out.
Okay, good.
The main theory is that most humans, or all humans, do use their language in the left hemisphere of their brain. And the left hemisphere of your brain controls the right-hand side of your body.
Yeah.
And because humans are very expressive animals, as are some monkeys, I always wave my hands around when I'm talking sometimes, I am now. So as you express yourself, you visualize it. That's why it's right-hand dominant, because we have a much larger, language center in our brain, which dominates that side of the brain.
So that leads to the question of what left-handed people do.
Well, I am left-handed.
Yeah, so what does that mean, that you're controlled by the right-hand side of your brain?
Well, apparently so. But there's another theory that actually it comes from Neanderthals.
Okay.
And this is because I don't know how someone works. Well, I do know how someone works out. They had this front teeth of a Neanderthal, and he was holding some leather with his left hand and his teeth, and scraping it with his right hand, and from that, because they had little scuff marks in his teeth where he'd hit himself.
Okay.
And they worked out that most Neanderthals were right-handed, and we interbreed with Neanderthals, and therefore we got the right-handedness from Neanderthals is another theory.
But then we'd still want to know the evolutionary.
We don't know why Neanderthals are, but they're extinct, so it's a bit harder to work out.
Are you sure they're extinct?
Kangaroos are left-handed.
Are they?
Mainly, yeah.
This is fascinating stuff. Qualifications?
I did a medical genetics degree, and this came up in one of the lectures.
And it is one of those things that there is no definitive answer to it, but these are the two most popular theories.
Yeah, and I think because I remember it because I'm left-handed, and it sort of speaks to me.
Yeah, of course you would.
Weird,
do.
Apparently.
You would. Do. Well, I mean, not only disproportionately weird. We've come a long way, Lewis. I'd count your lucky stars. You know, back in the day, they'd have strapped your left hand behind your back and made you do everything with your right hand.
That happened to a friend of mine at school.
Did it still? Still. Well,
yeah.
Crikey.
Not to me. I broke my left hand, smudge everything.
Yeah, well, that is always, people don't understand that, do you? I mean, you're all right with a biro, but I can't imagine you've got much use for a fountain pen.
Everything's on computers these days.
Round of applause for Lewis. Lovely stuff. One of the things about Mystery Hour, it's remarkable how few people cite their degree when answering a question. You think how many of us are sort of getting to university was so. Have I ever used my philosophy degree in answering a Mystery Hour question? I don't think so. Matthew's in Swansea. Matthew, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on.
So it's about the Team GB name.
Is that the only one left? Oh wow! Carry on. Well, take your time, mate, because we've got 2 minutes till Sheila starts. So don't no rush.
I believe it is still called Team GB and Northern Ireland. That's the official team name, but it was changed. They dropped the and Northern Ireland to basically roll off the tongue for marketing purposes.
But why not UK? So
it's the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, but it's also to cover the larger areas such as, you know, Channel Islands, Falkland Islands, etc., Gibraltar, that are...
I think you're going to give a round of applause, but I'm going to add something to this.
Of course.
Ukraine.
I'm sure there's a punchline here, so I'm just missing it.
Ukraine. Would Ukraine have competed before the Soviet Union?
Probably not.
Why not?
No, I thought it was your punchline, James.
No, there's no punchline. That's my catchphrase. There's no punchline. But if Ukraine have already got UKR, then we couldn't have UK because it would look really confusing.
That's not a bad shout either.
It's not,
You're
it?
Thinking of the abbreviations on TV. Can you imagine if they were both playing football against each other?
Well, exactly that. Which luckily we don't do, because we don't have a UK football team, do we? But so it was originally GBNI, probably, was it, or something like that?
Yeah, and I believe it still is. It was simply changed
officially
by the British Olympic Association, where they've dropped it for sort of marketing purposes, to make it a little bit more easy to roll off the tongue.
Qualifications?
Team GB Northern Ireland. Pub quizzes every time it's the Olympics, it comes up in a pub quiz.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, that is it, isn't it? I mean, that is about as best a qualification as it's possible to get on mystery. I learnt it in a pub quiz all day long. Well done, Matthew. Columns in Dublin, I'm out of time, but I'm intrigued to know why you rang in.
There's a small expansion on what he just said.
You've got 3 seconds.
Most sporting bodies in Ireland are all Ireland, apart from soccer. So we've got Northern Ireland and Republic of Ireland playing soccer, but we've got an all-Ireland rugby team. We've got an all-Ireland boxing team.
Oh, yeah.
Most sports from Northern Ireland would be represented by a union from that all-Ireland. So most sportsmen, most sportswomen from Northern Ireland, unless they're in a specific niche sport, which isn't really in
This is an interesting adjunct to the answer. So I'll give you a quick round of applause. I can't take any more time, Colin. I've already eaten into Sheila Fogarty's program.
It's fine. I want to talk about Ukraine.
Go on.
I Googled it. Is that bad?
No. You are Sheila Fogarty, so you don't have to abide by the rules of Mystery Hour. But, that is the only rule of Mystery Hour, is that you're not allowed to Google
stuff. Well, I've just Googled. Do you want to know what the fruits of my labour were? Ukraine first participated at the Games as an independent nation in 1994.
Oh.
Previously, athletes of modern Ukraine competed as part of the Russian Empire, 1900 to 1912.
Wow.
And the Soviet Union from 1952 to 1988. And after the dissolution of the Soviet Union, Ukrainian athletes were part of the United Team. Yeah, the Unified Team.
Well, that's a good job I gave him a round of applause.
In
1990. Isn't it? I didn't take it for myself. I had nothing to do with Ukraine at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, don't do that again. Thank you. All right.
That's the punchline.